Hello, hello, hello. This is Tina Michelle, and welcome to Mom's Chat Live. You know, this is another beautiful day, and I get to have, again, one of the most amazing guests ever. I think all the moms that we have on our show are so spectacular, so absolutely amazing. I just can't wait to celebrate them week to week. Now, one of the things about this show today, it's going to answer a lot of questions for a lot of women, because we'd like to believe that everything was perfect in our lives. There is no difficulties. We're going to have all the information that we could possibly need to be these empowered moms and empower our children on a day-to-day basis. But what we've come to realize is that a lot of that expertise, a lot of that education is behavior, right? And a lot of times, learning is caught, not taught. Are you following me? Learning is caught, not taught. So what does that mean? We hope that we see these roles in life and society modeled, that we have these great, you know, Joan Cleaver, does anyone know who that is anymore? Joan Cleaver type moms, Joan Cleaver type dads, and they're absolutely perfect. And when things don't work out the way we want them to, we can just cut to commercial. But that's not real life. That's not real life at all. So we have these challenges. And as moms, working through things on a day-to-day basis, sometimes we don't want to admit what's happening. Sometimes we don't even want to understand that we don't have all the answers. And sometimes we're very unforgiving. But there comes a time where I hear a story, or I meet a person, and I connect with a person. I'm so fascinated by their story. I listen to them, I cry with them, and I'm so fascinated by the fact that, oh my God, I'm in the presence of a true hero. I'm in the presence of a true champion. So that's how my interviews are chosen. Mom's Chat Live is chosen based on sheroes. These are my heroes. When I hear about them, when I can sense something about them, that they have walked through things, and not only have they walked through things, they are willing to tell their stories so that other people, other humans, moms, dads, children, can be completely empowered. That's my show today. I have this beautiful being that I have met on the phone, and only on the phone, named Shell. She's on the line, and she's going to tell you what she wants to tell you and what she doesn't want to tell you, because her story is so compelling and so absolutely, it just takes a lot of courage every single day to be this beautiful woman. I want you to jump over to her website while we're doing the show, and I believe she's on the line now. And I want you to go to cherish-you.org and learn more about her as we sort of walk through this journey. If you saw the promo, if you saw the post, and you saw what I said, making lemonade out of lemons, I know how cliche is that, but you have no idea the magnitude and the levity of that statement. So let's bring on our guest today. Shell, are you there? As our system tries to take her off a hold, go over to her website, cherish-you.org. Learn about her. On her website, she has created resources that are amazing. Shell, are you there? I see her on the line. She has some resources that are absolutely amazing. And one of the things, one of the blogs that's on there, the Quiet Fighter blog, right, addresses the needs of a young girl who's in a lot of trouble. So as we're talking, as you're listening to this interview, I need you to go over there and read it. I'm sorry if you're being emotionally confronted today. Actually, maybe I'm not sorry, because sometimes we need to be. But I'll apologize in advance, because there's no way you're going to have any relationship with this show today without needing to do something. You know that my background is a life coach. So for me, it's all about action and getting into action. Michelle, are you with us on the line here on Mom's Chat Live? If you can hear me, try to call in. Call in on the number at 914-338-1303 because I don't see you on the dashboard. As we wait for our guests to call in, I don't know if you got to hear the last interview, guys, with Adrienne Ashley. We had such a great time talking to her when she was on, and we talked about autism, we talked about spirited parenting, we talked about female issues. Go to the archive on easywaybroadcasting.com and listen to that show. We had a show with Sugar T that was absolutely amazing. What does it mean to be a social entrepreneur? What does it mean to change your life after selling 20 million units in the industry with your brother and known as a celebrity, but you got to reboot your whole entire life publicly. So she shared that with us. We have some great shows coming up in the very near future, so make sure you go to easywaybroadcasting.com. For those of you who don't know that who that is, that's Eric Zulli. Eric Zulli is our broadcast partner, and he's in the top 400 of Blog Talk Radio. So if you want to be on the show, please contact me at info@tinaspeaks.com, and we guarantee you that it will be a lot of fun and very, very compelling, as long as we can get you on the line. We're working here to get Shell on the line because I cannot wait for you to hear her story. I believe that she just called in directly. Is that you, Shell?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yay.
Yay. Show. For some reason, it wasn't letting me on. Good morning.
Well,
thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited that you're here, and I don't know if you heard the intro. That really, we're celebrating you today. So it's Mom's Chat Live, and you are my weekly shero.
Oh, I love that title. I saw that, and I'm like, oh, isn't that fun?
Yes, you are my weekly shero. And so what I love about how we connected on the phone. It was really to talk about something else with your husband. And then when I heard your story, I was like, oh, my God. And that was only a piece. That wasn't all of it, right?
Yeah.
Then we talked again the other day, and I already wanted you on our live show, right, in the studio, the Tina Speaks show. But I'm like, I can't wait anymore. I need to talk to her now. I think you have a conversation for our global audience of moms that is going to completely uplift them, that's going to compel them. I don't know if you heard the part when I said, you know, we all wish that we could be perfect, and we wish we can have these, you know, say that we had this perfect model mom, you know, that completely showed me the ins and outs of being a mom. And really, they need a class in school, you know, parenting 101, as soon as you hit college, right? Right after home economics and, you know, the party at the kegger. They need to have that they need to have that class in college. But they don't.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
They don't have that class. So I want people, as they're over there on your site at cherish-you.org, learning more about you. And I know they're going to be confronted, emotionally confronted, because this is real life stuff that's on your site. Tell people about yourself. Tell them what you want to share.
Oh, gosh, where to begin? Well, first and foremost, I am a mom. I have two absolutely amazing daughters. And I'll apologize to everyone ahead of time because this is my life. I have lived it. And at nearly 52 years old, I still get really emotional about parts of it. I get emotional about my children because what happened to me as a child, I was told I would never have kids, that there was too much damage. So the fact that I have them is a miracle, and I'm so excited about that, and they are amazing children. Like so many kids, you know, we have parents that are great and parents that are not so great. Both my parents were alcoholics and unfortunately brought some dangerous people into our home. My parents got divorced when I was about 3 years old, and my mom brought someone into our home that was supposed to be a nanny, and it was a man who was about, I think, 19 or 20 years old at the time, and he ended up becoming my stepfather and began molesting me at about that same time, between 3 and 4 years old. At 6 years old was the very first real rape, and terrifying. And I remember every detail. Our home had burned down, and we were out of town, and we came back to burnt walls, and our neighbors up the hill from us let us stay at their home. And one morning, my stepdad said, "Hey, you know what? Let's go down and look at the house, see if there's anything to salvage." And I was like, "Okay." So I'm going down there with him and walking to partial walls and no roof and dead fish on the floor and things burned and melted. And I walked into my room, and the ceiling was gone. I remember looking up and seeing that, looking at everything in my room was wet and damaged from the firefighters. And as I was walking over to look at a vanity in my room, I was about 6 and a half years old. Suddenly, I was violently thrown face down on my bed. My bed was burnt and charred, and as my face was being pressed into it, I could smell the smoke and the water, and I didn't understand what was happening. And that was the very first time. And
you were 6 and a half years old.
I was 6 and a half, and I when I realized who it was and what was happening to me, I cannot tell you the fear and the terror, because this is a person that, you know, even though for the first 3 years he had been with us, tempered and violent, but this part had never happened to me before, and I was astounded. And you think you're supposed to be safe with an adult as a child, and especially one that's your parent, you know. And after the attack was over and I had screamed and cried, I mean, pushed my face into the mattress, and as we were leaving, he said, "You know what? Marilyn might have heard you scream." Marilyn was the mother of the family that had taken us in. And he said, "What I'm going to do, you're not going to make a sound. Do you understand?" And I just shook my head. Yes, I didn't know. And he took me by my right hand, and he put my hand in the jamb of a door that was still up, and he slammed the door on my hand and broke my fingers. Because
my
goodness, to think that the reason I screamed was because I hurt myself. So
he
purposely
slammed your hand into the door, and your finger was broken.
Yeah, yeah. And we went back up to Marilyn's house, and she took care of me. She didn't know what else had happened. She didn't see the other damage, but she saw my hand. And she washed the smoke and dirt off my face and iced my hand. But that was the first kindness, actually, that I had ever seen from an adult, to be truthful, that I could remember. My mother was cruel. She would beat with anything she could find. Sometimes it was a shoe or a coat hanger. We got good at running away from her when we were little. But I was always even afraid of her. And I remember watching Marilyn and thinking, oh, my gosh, this is what a mother is supposed to be like, not like mine. And that was the first lesson that I had in my head of what I wanted to be like when I grew up.
Mm. Yeah, so even in the midst of all that hardship, in the midst of all that pain, there were still sort of like these little markers of distinction that helped you to see this, not this.
Exactly, exactly. And this activity went on throughout all of my childhood, and it would get worse and worse. Finally, I was 15 years old, and at 16, I thought, I have to fight back. I can't take it anymore. I had become so depressed. I was on different antidepressant medications. I was secretly a cutter. I the only things I could control in my life were pain I inflicted on myself and what I ate. Sounds silly, I know, but those were two things that I had control of. I became a vegetarian. I didn't want to eat meat there's a whole big story behind that. We were, but that
we shared yesterday.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I decided.
And
that
see, it doesn't sound silly at all because you know, on the other side of the counseling table, right? And even in my own life, what do people do when there's no control in their lives? A lot of girls are bulimic or anorexic. Right? And even with the phenomenon that we are noticing with the teens and the cutting, the pain that they're experiencing in their life for just a moment while they're hurting themselves can be focused in one area and actually override the emotional pain at that moment. I know for those of us who have never gone through that, we can't even understand it. For those of you who are just chiming in right now, this is Tina Michelle, and you're listening to Mom's Chat Live. We are having an amazing, a compelling but sensitive conversation with Shell. Shell is the founder of cherish-you.org, and she has committed her life to saving lives. This is what she does. I am so absolutely blessed and fascinated by the work that she does on a regular basis. That when I spoke to her on the phone, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the passion. Are you there, Shell?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you brought me to tears several times when we were on the phone. Several times. Because though maybe my situation wasn't as extreme, but, you know, the human experience is the human experience. So if we were to be honest, right, and go under the hood of our emotions, we may not have had the same circumstances, right? But we have the same feeling. We've all felt terrified. We've all felt insecure. We've all been disappointed. But for you to so generously share with me the story that you shared with me yesterday, I realize I'm receiving a huge gift right now because the amount of courage that it takes for you to take that stand every single day is absolutely miraculous.
For me, it's part of my, I think, it's almost a reward. It sounds odd to say that, but I had such a difficult childhood that I feel like God brought me through it. God was there. There were times I didn't understand where he was, and it's really interesting. I want to talk about how I know God exists and how I know he was part of that, but for me, I was charged with this difficult life, with surviving that life, with flourishing and becoming successful, becoming a parent of amazing children. And I feel like I've been charged with a great responsibility now to use what I have experienced, what I have learned, and make a difference. You would ask me, the first person that really asked me, what do I really want to see with my life? What do I want to see with Cherish You? And I want something that's probably not possible, but in my lifetime, I would love to see child abuse be something we read about in history books, something we never, ever see again on the front page of a newspaper or on the web as something that happened. I want it to be something that happened and we learned from it and we moved on and we're no longer those wild animals. You know, it's hard for me to fathom that anyone can treat a child the way that they do, to hurt them. I mean, I have a grandson who is the most adorable, gorgeous little man. He's just a snuggler. And I look at that angel baby in that perfect face, and I think, how could anybody want to hurt him? I can't get my head around it, and I thank God for that. I thank God
You shared a story with me yesterday, and you know something, as I meditated to get ready for today, that was probably one of the most remarkable things in my mind. Because what you're talking about is a person who could hurt someone like an angel is a monster, right?
Yeah.
That's a monster. Yeah. And then with everything that you walk through, the opportunity for you to almost give permission to anger, guilt, bitterness, angst, and then transfer that in a form of abuse towards your next generation. You had a moment of decision. And that moment of decision shaped who you are today. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. We used to go hunting a lot. That's how my family, we were pretty poor, and a lot of times the only food that was on our table was whatever we went to get. If that meant that I had to pull an avocado off a neighbor's tree or an orange, that might have been my breakfast or my dinner. But we hunted a lot, and it's something that I really didn't like. I really hated it. And one time my stepdad took me hunting, and in the middle of that, got for whatever reason, that was a great to rape me. And he did. And he had a Bowie knife. And with that Bowie knife, he carved a line on my back, and I still have that scar. And he told me I couldn't move. I couldn't make a sound. He had to show me that I could sit and suffer through pain and not let it affect me. And then I had a .22 semi-automatic rifle that was given to me as a Christmas gift one year. I think I was 12. And he walked away, and he left that loaded gun sitting next to me. And I picked up the gun, and I pointed it at his head. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't pull the trigger. And he, as he's walking away, starts laughing at me. And he turns around, and he says, "You're not like me. You can't do it. You don't have the guts." And I thought in my head, it's not that I don't have the guts. It's that I don't want to be a monster like him. I knew that if I actually took that life, that brought me down to his level. It's not my job. It's not my right. And at that moment, I made that decision that I would not be like him, that the rest of my life, I would not hurt a human being. And I didn't.
That was a game changer.
Absolutely.
That was a game changer.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I thought about that, I said, wow, you know, we have these moments of decision, and a lot of times they happen. How old were you at that time?
I was probably 12 or 13. The gun was given me that year at Christmas, so probably 12 or 13 at the time.
See, and that's the age, right, that we sort of develop our worldview, right? That age between 8 and 13 years old. We decide the relationship that the world has with us at that moment. So for you to make that decision, it shifted your path, your journey. So I know people are listening and they're going, oh, my goodness, how did you get out of this situation when you're that young? How did you become so empowered? So I know we only have, this is a 45-minute show, and I want people to be able to get resources. And if you're listening to us, you're just logging on. This is some hard content. I get that. But it's hardly abnormal content. This beautiful woman that's on the line with me, it's a sad thing to say. But you beautiful woman, have chosen to take the stand and to lend your voice to those who cannot speak. And that, to me, is absolutely phenomenal. Phenomenal, because it's so easy for us to say, you know what, it's not happening in my house. It's not in my backyard. I don't want to know. We might see that kid in the grocery store, as you described to me, wearing a turtleneck, and it's 80 degrees outside, covering up her neck. People may walk past that child in school, past that child in church. Never say, why are you wearing a turtleneck? And it's 80 degrees. Knowing that something is probably being covered up. I'm hoping that at the end of this broadcast, those of you who are listening, at least have her website. Because on that website, there are articles, there are blogs, and there are resources on cherish.u.org that could be the difference between life and death for a young person, or even yourself when it comes to healing, if you've never told your story. Shell has created a safe place for people to tell their story and get help. So I wanted to just say that right quick, because we get people coming on at different times, and they're jumping in. Yes, this is hard content, and unfortunately, and this is how I thought about it when I was preparing, it's hardly unusual. a lot of abuse is happening every day behind four walls. And the law that they call Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the U.S. military actually originated in homes for children who are to be seen and not heard, as you said to me yesterday.
Yes, that was a statement that used to just frustrate me so much because I knew I had no voice. I knew at that time, you know, when people go on Cherish You, and I hope that your listeners will do that, I do talk about my story. And one of our mottos on the site is giving a voice to healing. And the reason for that was that there was a time in my life when I realized I couldn't control him, you know, how good I tried to be. And I did. I thought, if I'm a good child, he'll stop hurting me. I had no idea that that wasn't the case. It wasn't that I was bad. It's just who he
was.
Right. He was a monster. And I couldn't control that, and I learned that. And the other thing I learned was that there was no...
Nor was it your fault, and that's important. It's not your fault.
Right. I did learn that. And I knew I had no control. There was nothing that I did. And I also knew there was no one that was going to help me, which was a sad reality for me at that time. You know, it's like, okay, I have to survive this. I think that we all get that fight or flight, you know, and I was going to fight. I was not going to give in and let him win either in breaking me emotionally or killing me physically, which he actually did try to do. At 15 years old, he tried to kill me, and he thought he did. And left me wrapped in a blanket in the woods behind our house in this big ravine during a rainstorm. And it's so funny, at this stage in my life, I'm still coming across things that make me understand why I have an issue with rainstorms. And it took me up until just seriously 2 weeks ago to realize why. And it's so funny to me that I shake and I cry and I get very upset during thunder and lightning. And I thought about it, and he's like, oh, my gosh, it's because that's where he left me, covered up in brush and stuck back there to die. And I am so thankful that I survived that.
How did you survive it? I know our listeners are going, oh, how did she survive that one? And you, because you were, what, 15?
I was 15. And I had, he'd left me out there all night. And I was coming in and out of consciousness. I could hear the rain and the thunder. And I could hear, all of a sudden, I could hear something moving the brush. And this dog and started pawing at the blanket in the brush. And the boys pulled the brush off me that were with the dog. And there were two little boys that lived not far from us. I don't know them, and I really wish I knew them. I would love to thank them today, and I never did. But they pulled the blanket back, and they saw my face. And they were 8 and 12. And I know that they knew. Just looking at me, they knew. And one of the little boys stayed with me and the dog, and the other little boy went home to get his dad. And I couldn't speak because my jaw was fractured. And the dad came back, and I can't remember what he said to me. I really can't, and I wish that I could, and I wish I could remember his face, because I can't. And I would love to thank him, too. But he picked me up, and he carried me, and I could point to my house. And he took me there, and we got in there, and here's my stepdad. Look on his face was interesting because he really thought he'd never see me again. And my mother was there, and she knew. And the man laid me on the couch, and my mom convinced him that they would take me to the hospital. It was my fault that somehow I had run away, and he... It was so funny to watch her act concerned, but at the same time covering up completely for my stepfather because she knew exactly what had happened. She knew that it was him. And when that man left, trusting that she was going to take care of me, she looked me in the eye, and she told me, when we go to the hospital, you're going to tell them that you fell out of a tree in our yard. And I knew at that moment
there was no chance that she was going to protect me.
And we got to the hospital, and I told them exactly what she said, that this had all happened falling out of a tree. And if you really looked at me, there's no question, you would know. There's bruises on my neck. You could see the thumb bruises on either side of my larynx and finger bruises on the side of my neck. My face looked like Frankenstein. And they didn't do a rape kit because I convinced them. One of the things that a child who is tormented will become very good at is becoming a great actor. We will convince the world with a very engaging smile and a happy face and a happy voice that there is nothing wrong, because we don't want anyone to know. One, we're afraid for our family. We're afraid for the rest of the family that they won't be safe if we tell, because monsters like that have that control over you. They will convince you and terrify you that anyone you know is in danger if you open your mouth. And
well, you lived like that for years, because you had two brothers, right?
I did have. I actually had three brothers, and I had two of them in the house with me. And one night, my mom had told me that he was on his way home, and they were at a bar. And she called from the bar, and she said, you know, your stepdad's on his way home, and he's in a foul mood. I want you to go get in bed with your brother, thinking that that would keep me safe. And as I saw the light go across the glass, which every night I did, I watched for those lights, the headlights of the car, to go across the window in my room, and I would know that he was home. And I would wait for his feet to either come walking down the hallway and open my door or not. Every night. And that night was no different. And he walked into my brother's room with a gun, and he pointed it at my sleeping brother's head and with his finger gestured to me to follow him. And I got up, and he told me that I would never do that again. Nope, I won't. And the next day, he took two cantaloupes, and he laid them in the front yard. And he pointed the gun, and he shot both of them. And he looked at me and said, "Are we clear?" And I knew what he meant. That was my brother's. And to protect them, I never said anything again. And that leaves a pretty indelible vision and memory in your head. And
yeah.
So you do whatever you can to protect the people that you love.
And that's the ultimate bully. The ultimate bully.
Oh, yeah. Now, my third brother, my oldest brother, who took his life about 17 years ago, saved my life. He actually is the one that took me to the police. And the reason is because a friend of my mom's was sleeping on the couch at our house, and my stepdad came in and grabbed me by the throat in my bed and said that he and my mom had separated, and he said, "I have a new life, and I'm getting married, and you're not going to tell anybody about me. Do you understand?" And I was absolutely terrified, and I was just like, shaking my head, yes. And he left. And the next day, that man that slept on our couch told my brother. And he said, "Something's going on with your stepdad and your sister," and he came and threatened her life last night. And he was a small guy. He couldn't have defended me if he wanted to. And my brother came to me with a Bible that he had given me when I accepted Jesus Christ into my life in 1977. And he put that Bible in front of me, and he said, "To put my hand on it, I'm going to ask you a question." I'm like, "Sure." And he said, "Has Robert ever hurt you? Has he ever done anything that was inappropriate?" And I couldn't lie. And I broke down, and I told him everything. And it was the first time in my life that anyone actually asked me. And he took me to the police, and that was another, oh my goodness, that was a whole other thing. That's probably a whole other show.
Yeah.
Talk about what
yeah.
happened there at the police department. But if it was not for him, I believe I would be dead. I do believe that. We did go to court. We went to trial.
I gave them all kinds of information, and they said that anything that had happened 7 years before his arrest was inadmissible, that most everything really they discounted because I was a child, because there was a this really just gets me, because my parents were separated, that they, even in the court reports, they said, you know, the mother has a lot of influence over her, and we think that she has influence over some of this story, as though it wasn't true. And as we're going through the trial, and we're giving out details, and I gave them some horrific details, and suddenly they just, you know, kind of took a break, and I left the room, and the judge spoke to my stepfather alone, and when they brought me back in, they said they had settled and that he had changed his plea to guilty of assault, not attempted murder, not rape, not sodomy, not any of the other things, kidnapping, any of those charges. Everything was dropped down to a simple assault, and he agreed to that. They sentenced him to 5 years, and he got out in 2.5 on
my
birthday.
Goodness.
And it was my 17th birthday, and we got a call that he was getting out, and he was, police officer told me, he said, I don't think you're safe. And I knew it wasn't. I knew that he would get me. One of the things he did in the courtroom, and this gets me too, this, I can't believe this, he stood up in the courtroom and looked at me, turned around with just acid in his mouth, and he said, you can change your face, you can change your name, I will find you, and I will kill you in front of everyone. And that didn't change anything? To me, that was absolutely incredulous, that it made no difference. And at that point, I felt like I had no value, really. Because if you say something like that to an adult in a courtroom, can you say that to a judge and walk out of the room? No.
No.
I was a child. And they didn't care. Literally did not care. And in 2.5 years, he was out. And I left the state and basically was kind of in hiding for about 30 years. And all through that time, he did try to find me. And I know he knows what I look like. I don't know what he looks like. I had a private investigator because someone had told me that he had passed, and I wanted to know for sure, and had a private investigator look for him and found out that he's not dead, that he's still alive, that he is, at that point, he was 2 hours from my house.
My goodness.
And that for the last 30 years, he had moved to every city that I had lived in. And I didn't know that. And it really, really freaked me out. And I went into kind of a bit of a depression when I found that out. And my daughter, who was trying to help me because she realized how difficult it was for me to be me, I had a career. I ran the choir in my church for 10 years and youth group and had my children and took care of other people's kids and loved people, had a marriage. And I struggled with PTSD. Really severe PTSD, and she was trying to find
I would imagine so.
It was pretty awful. I hardly ever slept. I would go 5-6 days with no sleep and then crash and burn. And she found a therapy for me that is an absolute miracle. It's called EMDR, and it is really phenomenal. It changes the way that you view an incident. It's really Tina, you had a really good description when you were talking about it. Basically what it is, you focus on the incident and it retrains your brain to think about it differently, to give it less importance in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was I started off with small things, and that small thing would domino into other things and change the impact that they had on me emotionally and mentally. It's absolutely brilliant. And I'm telling you, I went through, I would say, over 20 therapists. And we would get to a certain point, and every one of those therapists at that same point would just have this look on their face like I had lobsters going out of my neck, because I knew that they had no idea how to help me at that point.
They didn't understand. And it's funny because it is technology, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so when I say that to people and they say, what do you do? I said, I major in organic and human technology. That's what
I
do.
That.
Right? Yeah. Because it's technology. Our minds are like computers. And then most of the things that we go through that we experience over and over again, happy or sad, becomes these little parts of the brain, right, grafted in. And then when that memory is actually a negative memory, it takes a lot more bandwidth than a light memory. Stress takes 5 times the amount of bandwidth than happy, which is sort of not fair, but it does. That's why it's hard for kids to concentrate. A lot of times they'll have attention deficit disorders if there's a lot of stuff going on at home, and it may not be clinical. It may just be emotional. So what we get to do is, and what you were blessed to experience, is remap the drive and remove and try to decrease. We may not completely remove the virus, but decrease the impacts of the virus. And that's what I consider trauma, the virus.
Yes, yes. It's EMDR is eye movement desensitization reprocessing. And basically it does. It reprocesses how you see an incident. And it really was amazing to me as it began knocking over these walls of things that I couldn't get past. And every time it would just blow through another, it really was literally like watching dominoes fall. And obviously you can tell I still struggle a little bit with PTSD. I still have some difficulty with what I've experienced. But having Cherish You is really therapy for me too. At times, it's really difficult. I'm working with a teenage girl now that is going through terrible abuse in her home, and we're working on getting her out of it and getting her some help. And through Cherish You, we're hoping also to raise funds to get therapy for her. I think that this EMDR therapy would be fantastic. It's not cheap. Somebody has to pay for it, and I know that this girl would never afford it on her own, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do with Cherish You is be able to take care of people like this, to be able to get someone out of an abusive situation, to rescue them and to get them help. Because the biggest thing is that all of us have to do is stop the cycle. And for me, I was able to do that. I broke that cycle. I did not become that monster and terrorize another child who would terrorize another and another. I broke that cycle. My children have never known fear from me. I never, never once did I raise a hand to them that made them afraid of me, and I love that. That is, to me, one of the biggest successes that I can claim. And we all have that ability to not become the monster that terrorized us. And there are hundreds of thousands of voices out there. Yes, it is a choice. It's absolutely a choice. And
you know, there
I'm
are people
that,
who are probably listening
them.
To us. I'm trying to see if I can extend the show as we speak, so because I really feel like there are some other things that we need to talk, so we may have to do a part two on Mom's Chat Live, because we have 90 seconds. But there are people who are listening to this story out there, and there's, you know, there are different reasons why you're listening. You're saying different experiences while you're listening. Oh, my God, that happened to her. I'm so sorry. Here's my response to that. It may be happening to the child that you're walking past right now. It may be happening to a woman that you've known your whole life. I'm not saying you have to put yourself in harm's way or danger. I thank God for my friend Sean Arnold that we referred.
Awesome.
I referred to you. She's awesome. She's a CASA. She does CASA. She's child advocate, and she represents kids in these cases. But I'm saying that you can go over to cherish-you.org and find a resource and give it to them quietly. Whatever you do, do something. There's also that person that has been through this situation before and you've never spoken to people, or you heard about this therapy that Shell just spoke of, and it may be the one thing that helps you. Go over to her website right now and get that resource and just try. Don't give up on yourself. In this last 10 seconds, I'm going to let you close this out, Shell, and just give one thought, one word of empowerment to someone who may be going through that situation right now and needs to hear from you. How should we close out the show? What is that thought?
There is people that care. There are lots of us that care. Go to Cherish You, www.cherish-you.org. There is a place to tell us about yourself. Contact us. We will put you in contact with someone who cares. We are giving a voice to healing. That is what we do. We're giving a voice to the voiceless. And we do care. We do love you. And I'm hoping that this story is helping you and help you to understand that people care and people do want to help.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you so much for your courage and your generosity, because I know this is not easy, but I'm sure that people every day are being touched by you and being transformed by you. I just appreciate you. You're my hero. That's what I texted you right after our call. You are my hero, Shal. And I love you, and I love you, I love you. So, everyone, I want you to make sure that you go over to cherish-you.org and look for the archive of the show and bookmark on your calendar for 10 o'clock a.m. next week for Mom's Chat Live with Tina Michelle. We have Shelley Hunt coming on. She's absolutely transformational. Look at Tina Michelle, Michelle, and Shelley Hunt. So there's a trend for the next 3 weeks. It's the domination of the Michelles. Happening for the next three weeks.
There you go.
The next 3 weeks. All right, so we're going to have her come on. The week after that is Angelia White, Hope for Women Magazine's editor-in-chief. And then I think we need to have Shell come back on to do part two. So keep yourself posted on all our updates for Mom's Chat Live by going to easywaybroadcasting.com. Have a wonderful week, and stay empowered and be in action.
Thank you, Tina.
Thank you, Shell. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you, too. Bye.